So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. We are continuing our two-part series about creation according to the Bhagavatam. And today we're reading from second canto, chapter 5, text 5. Chapter is entitled The Cause of All Causes. And there was a slight misunderstanding, so the verse is not on the board, so I'll just go through it and then we'll see what happens. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada Ki. As the spider very easily creates the network of its cobweb and manifests its power of creation without being defeated by others, so also you yourself, by employment of your self-sufficient energy, create without any other's help. Purport. The best example of self-sufficiency is the sun. The sun does not require to be illuminated by any other body. Rather, it is the sun which helps all other illuminating agents, for in the presence of the sun, no other illuminating agent becomes prominent. Narada compared the position of Brahma to the self-sufficiency of the spider, who creates its own field of activities without any other's help by employment of its own energetic creation of saliva. Om Agyana Chimirandasya Jananjana Shalagaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Chashmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, let's see here. One moment. I brought notes again. I'm not sure why I do this, because it didn't go so well last time, but I've developed a new system. So now I have very large letters and then little headings under. So now I'm hoping I can figure it out. So on Friday we were talking about mainly the primary creation, which is on the side of Vishnu Tattva. Why is creation happening, and what is the primary activity? So that was there. And today we will then focus more on the secondary creation, which goes from Lord Brahma and down to where we're sitting here. So the conclusion day before yesterday was that the creation is happening because of us, but that is not as good as it sounds, because the reason is that we're not behaving properly. So actually the whole creation is a facility for, it's a correctional facility, you could say. This is always in the material world, always euphemisms are used. A jail is called a correctional facility, you know. You have a happy meal, not very happy actually. All these things, ethnic cleansing, it sounds good. It's clean, it's ethnic, everybody loves ethnic. So in this world, we have these kind of things. Okay, that was a side point. So yes, basically, Krishna enters into the creation in three levels, as we were saying day before yesterday. First as Mahavishnu, from whom universes are emanating when he breathes out. And then as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, he enters into these universes and make them function. And as Shirodakshaya Vishnu, he enters into every object or every living entity, every atom, and makes those work. This is what we know as Paramatma. So the switch is the Pradhan. The Pradhan is the material energy, but indistinct. It's just a soup of material energy that has been, the spiritual potency has been drawn out of it, so to speak. So the Pradhan is glanced upon by the Lord, and this agitates it. It creates a creative impetus the mode of passion comes in, and this agitates it. And time is added, and the jiva is added. So this is the elements of material creation. We have, usually we talk about 16 elements. It can be measured in different ways, but in this way we talk about 16 elements. We talk about ether, air, fire, water, and earth. And we have corresponding sensual experiences by that. In ether we have sound. In air we have the touch. We can feel the air touching our skin. In fire we have form. In water we have taste. And in earth we have smell. So it becomes grosser and grosser as we progress down. We also have corresponding senses to these sense objects. So this is the ear for sound. This is the skin for touch. It is the eye for form. It is the tongue for taste and the nose for smell. So in this way we have 15 elements, and then we add the mind as the kind of central communicative station for all these things where they interact. So this is basically what we need to get started. So then enters the Chaturvyuha. The Chaturvyuha is a fourfold expansion of Krishna. It consists of Shankarshan. Shankarshan is an aspect of Mahavishnu, who we were talking about day before yesterday. He's also known as Karana Dakshai Vishnu, Karana from the causal ocean where he's lying. He's also known as Balaram. In Gauralila, he is Advaita Acharya, but in Gauralila, he shares this post or with Brahma, because in Gauralila there's no real distinction between the primary and the secondary creation. And in Ramlila he's Lakshman, right? So then we have Pradyumna. Pradyumna is Garbhodakshay Vishnu. He's also Narayan, or in the Guna avatars we know him as Vishnu, when we talk about Vishnu as God. That was Garbhodakshay Vishnu. And then we have Aniruddha, who is the Paramatma. Also, I've just forgot. Sankarshan is also the deity for the jiva, because the jiva enters with him. And Pradyumna is the lord of intelligence, and Aniruddha then is the lord of Ahankara, the false ego. And then we have Vasudev, which is Krishna, the Leela, the complete, whatever happens is Krishna. So Sankarshan is in every process that goes on, there is always thinking, feeling, willing. You see something, thinking, feeling, the mind gets involved, there is some value, and then willing, then you start acting, and then Vasudev, then the Leela happens, something happens, right? So let me explain that. You are walking down the street, you see a bicycle, thinking. Then you think to yourself, that's a nice bicycle, as opposed to a not nice bicycle. This is feeling. And then you think, I have to get that bicycle, willing. So then you start acting, you find a bicycle repairman or a shop or something, and you possess the bike after this has gone on. This is the Leela. And then you go on with your life, and the same process repeats itself. So this is these four manifestations are governing everything that is going on a more practical level. So what you're doing is you're adding false ego. That is what is going on. The creation, it is described how we have nine creations. First creation is the Mahatattva. The first where the Pradhan gets agitated and this element separate, that's the Mahatattva. And then you have the Ahankara. This is the flavor of the whole creation is Ahankara. Ahankara means false ego. So the whole thing is actually false. That's why we say it's a jailhouse or it's a correctional facility, because we shouldn't be here. So that's that. So then you have the senses, the elements come in, you know. The senses, sense perception, the elements come from that. Then you have knowledge, because then you have something to know. Then you have the mind, because then whenever you deal with something, you get attached to it. So that's the mind. And then finally, you have ignorance, because you're engaged in all these activities that actually have no value, because you're not even supposed to be here. So these are the first six creations. And then you have three more, and these are the ones that we're mainly dealing with now with Lord Brahma, is the plants and trees, the lower animals, and then the humanoid forms. So these are the last three creations there are, and this everything is comprised of these things. Then that makes up the whole existence. And of course, we have a tenth, because there's always an exception, and that's the demigods, the special cases, you could say, like ghosts and demigods and the manus and stuff like that. They are categorized. They're kind of out of category, but they're considered the tenth. So in this way, the whole universe unfolds. We have this tendency to look at it as a thing of matter. Matter expands, Big Bang, whatever, and then we come in. But actually, we come in at the same time, and then the forms of matter are forming around our consciousness. So we come in as Lord Brahma. There's always this, this question is always there. Where did we fall from? Is always the standard question, and it always kind of, you know, gives a little bit, strange reaction. So basically, we fall from the spiritual world. That's why it's back to Godhead. You know, we come from Krishna. But our relationship was not qualified. We were not completely aware of our true relationship with Krishna. So in order to do that, you have to perform some activity. We performed a wrong activity. I'll get to that in a little while. So just to clarify that, some say we fall from the spiritual world. Some say we fall from Brahman. It's the same thing. It's like saying, about 6 weeks ago, I came to the manor. Where did I come from? Did I come from the airport, or did I come from Denmark? You know, it's both. You know, I came from Denmark to the airport and then here. So we come through Brahman. So we come from Brahman because there's nothing beyond Brahman. It's just an incomplete understanding of the spiritual world. We don't disagree with the Brahman without qualities that the Mayavadis are talking about. All we're saying is that it's incomplete. There is also functioning principles, and there is ultimately the supreme personality of Godhead, the personality behind the Brahman. So in this sense, that's where we fall in. This is described in Bhagavatam, in second and third canto, as a lotus bud that sprouts from the navel of Mahavishnu. And from that lotus, Lord Brahma comes. And Lord Brahma, that's us. We were all Lord Brahma at some point, because we are coming from beyond the three modes of material nature, so we cannot have any conditioning. And Lord Brahma is the position you have when you don't have any conditioning. That's just how he works. You know, when you don't have any conditioning, there's nothing holding you back. There's always, you know, we talk about good karma and bad karma. Actually, there is only bad karma, and that is what's holding us back. If I go to the gym every day, I develop the karma to lift heavy things. If I don't, I can't do it. So it's my conditioning that is deciding whether or not I can do what I want. So in that sense, Lord Brahma is not conditioned, so he can do whatever he wants. He can control whatever he wants. He comes from the lotus, and he looks around, and is a little bit bewildered, because what am I doing here? And from that, kind of shaking his head, he develops four heads. Far out, but nevertheless. And that doesn't help much, because he doesn't have anything to go on. You know, he has his senses, but that, you know, so one head, forehead, it doesn't really matter, because there's nothing to work with. So what he does is, the only thing he can do, basically, is he crawls into the lotus again and tries to climb down to see, where do I come from? What's going on here? That doesn't work. He climbs and he climbs and he climbs, and nothing's happening. He's not really getting anywhere. So he figures, nothing really left to do than to climb back up. He climbs back up. And he sits there, and then he hears the voice saying tapa, austerity. So being very pious, he's also naturally, he's not got the big false ego, so he thinks, okay, this is what I should do. So he performs tapasya. For 100 celestial years, he performs tapasya, austerities, and he meditates. And the Lord is pleased by that. And he reveals himself, first in the heart, and later as the Supreme Lord. And it is very nicely described in the third canto of how beautiful he is, and Lord Brahma is just amazed at this beauty. And what happens is, Lord Brahma looks at this and says, this is amazing, you know. And he offers prayers. And then he makes the error. He starts praying for the creative impetus of the Lord because he's so fascinated by this. And he prays, and very nice prayers. You can check them out in the third canto. And the Lord is also pleased by that. And he says, okay, if this is what you want, this is fine. You can start doing what I'm doing. If you're so fascinated by it, you can do that. So this is why Lord Brahma explains himself in the second canto that he explains this to Narada, that actually I'm not really doing it. Narada is offering prayers to Lord Brahma as the Supreme. Jai Sri Radha Gokula Ananda Ki, Sri Sri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki, Sri Sri Gornitai Ki. Yeah, so Narada is offering respects and prayers to Lord Brahma because Lord Brahma is all that he can experience. Whatever is beyond his experience. So he's offering prayers to Brahman as the Supreme. And yet he has some kind of understanding because he sees that Lord Brahma is also offering prayers and doing austerity. So there must be something higher. And then Lord Brahma explains that I'm not actually doing anything. Whatever I'm doing, I'm just copying the big guy, you know. He's the one who's the creator. I'm just filling out a post. I have a job to do here. So in this way, it goes on. But the very interesting thing to see here is that Lord Brahma, I mean, we're here. So that means Lord Brahma doesn't actually go back. Even though he is a devotee, he surrenders, he gets attached to the creative impetus, the passion of creating. He is very fascinated by that. So he has to, he develops some karma, and he has to get rid of that before going back. And then, unfortunately, we take the dive all the way down, and here we are. So now we have to make our way back up. That's why the second canto, which deals primarily with the secondary creation, it starts out with the first chapter is called The First Step in God Realization. So from that, we can also see that the first canto we were dealing with day before yesterday, that's actually just preliminary knowledge. And it's interesting to see that many of the doubts and misgivings that we have are actually dealt with in the first canto. So it's just, you know, it's important that we try to get over these things about what is my duty and I'm a devotee, I can do anything, versus there are some guidelines, you know, given by God for our own benefit, you know. So these things should not be taken, we should not have our false ego invested in it, because they are there for our own benefit. So like the mom insists that the child has his teeth brushed, you know, it's uncomfortable for the child, but it is ultimately for the child's best. I mean, ultimately, we don't have to go to the dentist ever. You know, we can just not do it. But like Brahma, some austerity is beneficial if we want to get anywhere. So that's the point of the first canto. Second canto takes off from, okay, now we've come to that level where we say, okay, there is only God. That's why I picked this verse, because it's this idea that the spider's web, it's a part of the origin, the cause and the effect. We talk about sat and asat. These are the two elements of creation. Sat means the cause and asat means the effect. So that's the masculine and the feminine principle. And everything is encapsulated by these two terms. So now we've come to that conclusion that this is where we are. We have to go. So then the first step in God realization. Second chapter deals with, first chapter deals with the Brahman realization, the impersonal aspect of God. Because after the primary creation, the secondary creation is called the Virat Roop. We know it as the universal form of the Lord. So that is the whole universe as we see it, as we experience it. And there are various methods for connecting with that when we're not really super God conscious. So Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita how of mountains he is the Himalayas, and of rivers he is the Ganges, and of science he is the spiritual science of the self, and so on. So many methods are there for connecting whatever we see back to the Supreme Lord. But still, it is an impersonal understanding, because, and it's also described as imaginary, because we're taking it from our point of view. Me, and then there's the Lord. Whereas we progress, we will start to see everything as the Lord, and I'm just the instrument. So we see, there we can explain it using grammar, actually, that the materialist thinks that I'm the subject, and everything else are objects for my enjoyment, you know. We, in every sentence, we always have subject and object and verb. So the beginner devotee, he will see, okay, I'm the subject, and then God is the object. A little more advanced, God is the subject, I'm the object. But when you get really advanced, you see that, no, actually, God is the subject, everybody else is the object, and then I'm just the instrument. That's the third grammatical case you have in Sanskrit. English is not big on grammar, but in Sanskrit you have subject, object, instrumental, dative, and so on. And actually we're just the instrument. We're just assisting the activities that are going on. This is how it works, because Krishna manifests through his creation. This is why all of these things are explained, is so that we understand that there is a non-difference between Krishna and his creation. It doesn't work if I'm here with Krishna, I'm serving Krishna, and everybody else is a schnook if they can't get in the way of my service. Because everybody else is also trying to serve Krishna. So if I prevent them, if I get in the way, I'm creating aparad. This is what aparad actually is if you're getting in the way between someone else and God. That's what an aparad is. So that's why sometimes it can be difficult to understand what is actually aparad and not, because sometimes you're being nice to people and it's aparad because you're actually leading them down the wrong path. And sometimes you're being heavy with people and it's actually devotional service because you're stopping them from going down the wrong path. So it can be sometimes a little bit tricky. But this is the correct understanding. And so the first three chapters of the second canto progress through Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan realization. So this is the way we connect back. Krishna connects to us, sending out his energies in various forms and shapes and sizes, so that we can connect back and get back to where we're supposed to be, because we're dealing with everything improperly now, and we're just getting the facility for what we wanted. Brahma offered some very nice prayers, and he got what he wanted. So this is our situation. And the problem is, I got a few comments last class was not as technical as they had, you know, expected. And I'm hoping I made up for it now, but that's actually the problem. If we see it as overly technical, who is Shankarshan? Who is Prajumna? Who's Aniruddha? Who are these people? If we see them as different people, we've completely missed the point. They're all Krishna, but they're aspects of Krishna. And if we get too attached to that or too interested in that, or we start discussing that, we're actually forgetting where we are. These things have a secondary reason for being explained. It's not a primary reason. If we see the Bhagavatam here, it's always about glorification. I mean, many, many of the chapters have these prayers and glorifications of the Lord, and we're just explaining all this Chaturvyuha, Siddhadeha, all these things are just explaining very small details about how to connect, you know. But most of the time, it's just doing service. That's what the foundation of all the rasas are, is service. If you have a relationship with anyone that has any kind of value, there is service. And the value of the relationship is corresponding with the level of service. So this whole idea with, we have Shakya Ras, we have Vatsalya Ras, we have Madhurya Ras, we have a fascination with these things because it's the spiritual world is very exotic. But the more we think about these things, the more we will stop ourselves from actually obtaining it. The gopis, they are not thinking about Madhurya Ras. They couldn't care less. They're thinking about service. How can I serve Krishna? So in our lives, there is always opportunity for service. And this is the way of actual realization. Brahma, he tried it. Lord Brahma, he tried going down the lotus stem and using his senses and his logical facility to try and grasp what is going on. It didn't work for him. It is not going to work for us. He's got four heads, remember. You know, we have one, and it's sometimes not sure it's working. So this is why we say that, you know, we have three ways of obtaining knowledge. There's prajaksha, which is through the senses. There's anuman, through the mind and intelligence. And then there's shabda, which is through authority. And prajaksha doesn't work because we're very imperfect and we have conditioning, so we will be contaminated by that. We will not be able to see things for what they are. We know it usually. We think that our own problems are very unique and very special and very complicated. And yet we see that every other person's problem are really very simple and not that complex. And for some reason, we don't make the connection. Maybe my problems are also not that complex. We think that it's very complicated. And this is the influence of the mode of ignorance, you know. That our logic is not actually working because it is based on the senses. So, like Lord Brahma, he went back up and he performed austerities. And from that, he got a clear signal to Krishna. And he got the shabda, he got the authority. For us, as we were explaining day before yesterday, we have Bhagavatam. And we have the Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is our shabda. The interesting part is that if we really want to understand something, chanting Hare Krishna is often better than reading philosophy. Because what happens is that all the emotions, all the samskaras, all the false ego kind of drops down. We lift ourselves above that. It's like being in a maze, and then suddenly you stand up and you can see the maze from up. So you can see easily where, this is the way out. But if you're in the maze, it doesn't matter how much you think about it. You know, you're lost. You can't see where is the way out. So that is why meditation is actually a higher principle than logic. We live in a world where logic is praised as the ultimate. And it's not so. Meditation gives us access to the shabda, and it allows us to understand what is actually the authority. And connecting ourselves with that, that will bring us liberation. We see later in the second canto, we see that Lord Brahma is relating these things to Narada, these things that Krishna related to Lord Brahma. And in that sense, we see that Krishna is the original spiritual master, Brahma is the original disciple, and from there the parampara develops. And it shows that we don't have a chance without the parampara. That is our link, our real link to God. Now, obviously, we hear, just chant Hare Krishna, you can go back to Godhead. It's true, but it's the same as where did I come from? Did I come from the airport or did I come from Denmark? It's just in reverse. When we're going through a guru before we go back to Godhead. Chanting will allow us to realize, wait a minute, this guru disciple concept is quite intelligent, actually. So you will get a guru, right? So there are more things to this. When we mention these things, we just mention the prominent. It's like you want to go to the concert. All you have to do is buy a ticket. But that's not all you have to do. You have to remember to breathe. if there are a couple of days till the concert, you have to find somewhere to sleep before that, or you have to get something to eat and drink and stuff. There are many things, you know. And you have to find out where is it, you have to get there. But all you have to do is get the ticket. Then the rest is kind of like, it sorts itself out. And in the same way, all we have to do is chant Hare Krishna. Then the rest will sort itself out. If we get too hung up on the details of creation in terms of the external manifestations, what came from what, and who is this, and that is an expansion of that, it's a rabbit hole. We disappear into it. We can keep going. If we want to get out, we have to go the other way. We have to connect it to something higher. That goes through meditation rather than logic. So the Bhagavatam is very simple. And it's also very complex. It depends on our consciousness. Lord Brahma was very pious. He was, as pious as you get. So for him, Krishna revealed the Vedic knowledge in four verses called the Chatur Shloki. And for us, we have thousands of verses here, right? 12 cantos of it. And other places, they have millions of verses because they get into more detail. So I just want to, because I promised the devotee I would get a little bit into the Chatur Shloki. So I'm going to just read the verses in English, and then I'm just going to make a small purport on it, because I promised I would. Brahma, it is I, the person. This is, by the way, this is second canto, chapter 9, verses 33 to 36. This is the whole Bhagavatam in four verses. Brahma, it is I, the personality of Godhead, who was existing before the creation, when there was nothing but myself. Nor was there the material nature, the cause of this creation. That which you see now is also I, the personality of Godhead, and after annihilation, what remains will also be I, the personality of Godhead. O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. O Brahma, please know that the universal elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I myself also exist within everything created, and at the same time I am outside of everything. A person who is searching after the supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, must certainly search for it up to this in all circumstances, in all space and time, and both directly and indirectly. So here what we see is, it's similarly to, there are those devotees who say that we never were in the spiritual world, because the spiritual world is all about relationship. It's not about a geographical place. It's not, we can't go there geographically. So in the same way, we can say that, no, we weren't, because we never qualified the relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we were in an impersonalist state at that time. So here he's explaining how a person who's searching after the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, must certainly search for it up to this in all the circumstances. So this is an example of what you want to do if you want to entice someone to go further. It's the same principle in Bhagavad Gita. In everything in Vedic, you analyze it with sambandha abhideya prayojana. Sambandha means relationship, the situation you're in, your relationship to everything that's there. Abhideya means your activity, what activity are you performing. And prayojana means the result that you're gaining. So in the Bhagavad Gita, you have 18 chapters. It's divided into three parts of six chapters. First part is sambandha, then come prayojana, and then abhideya. So it's first the situation, then the goal, and then the process. Why? Because we need to convince the mind. The mind needs to have something to work towards. Otherwise, it won't bother. If you just start explaining activities, the mind is not going to pay attention. If there is a goal, if there's some gain, then it will pay attention to the process. And in the same way here, in the two first verses, we have the sambandha. This is just what it is. Third verse, O Brahma, please know that the universal elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I myself also exist within everything created, and at the same time I am outside everything. So this describes what is known as achinta bheda bheda tattva, the simultaneous, inconceivable, sameness and difference of the Lord and his creation. So this is the goal of our life. And this is what we, in a more rassica way, explain as prema, you know, the supreme personal relationship with God. And then afterwards, he explains that a person who is searching after the supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, must certainly search for it up to this in all circumstances, in all space and time, and both directly and indirectly. Basically, that is the only activity there is. There is no material activity. It doesn't exist. We think it is, and that's what we call material. But everything is Krishna. We just have to figure out how it's connected. And in this way, the universal form and these explanations can guide us. But what we must never do is to get fascinated by it, you know, because we get attached to the form instead of the purpose for the form. So this this was my little discourse on the creation. If there are any comments, questions...